Please welcome Arisa to the stage to share her experience with Step 11, Upon Awakening.
Good morning. The diehards are here. This is what AnyLinks looks like. Good morning, everybody. My name is Arisa, and I am definitely an alcoholic. It has been an incredible weekend for me, and I hope it has been for you. I'm going to jump right in. So give you a little bit of a history. So years ago, we would do these, we called them workshops, before and after the real meetings. And this year we just decided that 8:30 was a real meeting. So we split up Step 11 because it's got its own focus, and it's really hard to talk about, you know, when you retire at night, in upon awakening, and all of these things, and generally, often you even hear it right in there with step 10, and it gets smushed in between, and then never mind step 12 gets, you know, you hardly ever get to step 12, and this year, you know, we're doing step 12 in all three legacies, which is so cool, and we're trying to really talk about what does it look like to have a sober life one day at a time, and one day at a time, and one day at a time. Because it isn't about, oh, I got it. It isn't a destination, but it's got to be this journey, and how do I keep going? And one of my sponsors used to always say, alcoholics are sprinters. You know, and I identify with that. You know, like, I'm going to go learn how, but I'm not an athlete, but I'll go learn how to, you know, throw pottery or make stained glass or whatever it is, and then I'll have all the stuff, and then, you know, I move on to the next thing. And I always need something new. I know, what's next, what's next, what's next, what's next, what's next? I want to go back through the first, you know, 9 steps because they wake me up. And yet, you know, when I was younger, I would hear people say, I live very comfortably in 10, 11, and 12. And I thought, yeah, maybe. I don't know. I didn't believe them. And I am somebody who really does believe in going back through the steps. And from the very beginning, I was taught that we're going to work the steps. And when we're done, we're going to work the steps. And when we're done, we're going to work the steps. And guess what happens after that? However, if I'm going to get this, you know, awakening that Alice was talking about last night, I need to actually be engaged with all of the work even with a completely full and open heart. And what does that look like? And how do I have this new beginning each day without looking for it out there? Because alcoholism is always about there's still something missing in here, trying to fill this hole in my soul. And the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is all about that. That thirst gets quenched by living this spiritual life. And then when I go back through the work again, it is a whole new dimension, but it's not because of a hole in my soul. I always hated that layers of the onion. You know, Alice brought up the layers of the onion. I hate that. You know why? Because there's nothing at the center. And you're telling me I'm nothing? But that's not actually true. When you peel all the layers away of the onion, you get the root. That onion is actually not the real organism. And that root of the onion will continue to grow new things. And so all of a sudden, I'm like, okay, maybe I could get on board with that. I like the term constant gardener. But when I first got to that idea, I'm thinking, man, we got a lot of weeds to pull. I mean, I got weeds. No, I'm probably the only person here who gets weeds. But I've noticed you never have to plant the weeds. They just come. They just come. And I can break my back pulling the weeds. But a really smart gardener plants what they want to see in their garden. And then you have something beautiful to focus on. And even farmers don't try to pull all the weeds. They just, when, you know, the harvest time comes, it gets sifted out. Like, let's just make sure that we're planting what we want in our lives. Plant what I want in my life. That's, for me, what this meditation is all about. Somebody asked me last year, I had handouts. I don't have them this year. If you want, I will be happy to send you a digital copy, because one of the things that I do is I turn this Upon Awakening into a prayer. But I'm getting ahead of myself. I got divorced today. First thing, every day, right out on the bed, onto my knees. And I thank God for divorcing me from self-pity, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. Because that's who I am. I am married to selfishness. I'm married to dishonesty. And I'm married to self-pity. It always bothers me that self-pity's first. How about vengeance? That sounds much cooler. But that's who I am. I talked about those stage characters, those voices in my head. And if I don't start the day from the beginning, see, I don't think Bill was somebody who didn't really consider verbiage. I think everything he said with intention. And so when it says upon awakening, they don't mean 30 minutes later or a few hours later or on my drive to work or in the shower and all of that. And I'm not saying that those aren't okay. It just isn't the ideal. The ideal is upon awakening. As this brain wakes up, as this erstwhile wild animal horse kind of thing that I've got in my brain is waking up, they start chattering. The conversations start. And they all have ideas about what's going to be, and who I am, and what you think, and what happened yesterday, and da-da-da-da-da, and it's like, oh my God. And it'll make it crazy. And I didn't realize, like I said yesterday, that the things that were going on in my brain weren't who I am. That they're just there. That I don't necessarily, that same sponsor used to say, you can kind of learn to starve those things. Because I have a tendency to feed the things that should be starved and starve the things that should be fed. I need to make sure that where I'm pouring Miracle-Gro is on something that I want to actually cultivate. Because I don't do that. I have this idea that God is supposed to be doing that for me. But 6 and 7, at one point I'm saying, we don't work on our character defects. We get, go work your, the other steps, make your amends and all that. And God comes in. However, the proper use of the will is to realign, realign, realign. And a gardener will, put a stake on a tree so it grows the way it wants to. I have espalier trees. I used to work at the cloisters in New York, and they have these espalier trees that grow along the wall. And I have them in my yard along the fence, and they grow the way that I trim them to maximize light and space and all of these things, that I get to help that tree grow. But only, God does that only by invitation. So if I don't get up in the morning, if I'm not willing to make God come first in my life, I don't have a life. And the irony is, you would think, okay, so God's the answer. Why do we need all this other stuff? Because I get blocked. I get blocked. Like Bill in his story where he talks about, for a moment he wanted and needed God and God came. But then it was soon drowned out by worldly clamors, mostly those within myself. So what's the point of this morning thing, right? I've done this nightly review. I've tucked myself in with God. Hopefully I've had a decent night's sleep. I often don't sleep decently. And I need to have no opinion upon that either. Upon awakening, and at this point, I've gotten into this habit of this is where I'm going to go. You can't go where you don't aim. The morning exercises, and again, I like to call them spiritual exercises. We're building some spiritual, muscles here. By doing this, I'm getting up every morning and I'm pointing my arrow. This is where I'm going. This is where I'm going. Happy, joyous, and free is where God wants me. That's the plan. If I get in a boat and I decide I'm going to London from Boston, I would be getting out a map, charting a, trajectory, and I would know, and I'd be checking all along the way, am I on course? And if I got just 1 degree off course, I would be nowhere close to London. Because over time, that variable gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And I can be thinking, I'm fine. There's nothing obviously wrong. Any good mariner knows you have to be watching. You have to expect to be blown off course by the wind, by the tide, by weather, by human error. That we don't stay on course easily. And this arrogance, this selfishness, this self-centeredness, that it should be easy for me. Because I have this feeling that it's easy for you. But that's not necessarily true. It's not hard for me. It's just, it is hard. Spiritual living is actually the easier, softer way. But it doesn't mean there's no work involved. It's about awareness. That 10 and 11 for me is all about, 10 is the inventory. Am I holding God's hand? Oh crap, no. 11 is grab it. Not holding on, so let's grab it. How do I connect to this higher power? How do I make sure that I am embracing this sixth sense, this vital sixth sense? So let's see what it actually says here. Upon awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. Now that's some clear-cut direction. And if you're in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous that have the think sign upside down, you've got a problem. Because I'm supposed to think about the 24 hours ahead. And I get very practical about this stuff because I am a big believer that Alcoholics Anonymous is a practical program of action. It has to be imminently doable no matter what. When I had surgery, I was still able to do this. When I had sick kids, I'm still able to do this. It is a practical program of action. It is not something that is unachievable. It is achievable for anybody, anywhere, even on your worst day. As soon as I wake up, I'm supposed to think about the 24 hours a day. Okay, let's just be clear. I'm doing it anyway. Who here isn't thinking about what's going to happen? Huh? Why do we make such a big deal out of this? Oh, I don't have time. I'm so busy. Yeah, I'm way too busy to have a good life. I'm already doing it. The only thing we're going to do is talk about the quality and the direction. And, you know, you want to make a big change in your life? 1 degree. Because when I try to make a 90-degree change, I break. When there are big storms, the trees that break are the ones that don't bend. The program of Alcoholics Anonymous is eminently flexible. It fits my life, it fits your life, it fits anybody's life. We wear life like that loose garment. That's okay. We're not talking about nothing matters, we're talking about it works no matter what. If I have the proper attitude adjustment, a new direction that I'm coming, when an airplanes have, you know, they're coming in, it's a different perspective, different way of seeing it, you know, those different points around the tree. If you're not able to do this, you're probably doing it wrong for you. It's supposed to work no matter what. So we're going to think about the 24 hours a day. 24 hours, okay. And the deal is, first, you better say some prayers. Because Zena, the warrior's in there, right? The wife is in there. The career woman, she's in there. The spiritual warrior's in there. I mean, they all have opinions about how this is supposed to go. And they want to judge the little thoughts that go into my head. And the truth is, everybody gets those crazy thoughts. As we've all talked about it this weekend. Everybody's got them. It's like, you know, somebody's like sitting there with a BB gun just shooting them, ping, ping, you know, and they're there, you know. But I'm the idiot that thinks I have to swing at every ball that's thrown. I gotta let a lot of them just go out. That has nothing to do with me. It has nothing to do with me. So when I start off my day, like I say, I start on my knees on a prayer and I thank God for divorcing me from self-pity, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. I thank him for making me the very best wife, mother, daughter, sister, sponsor, and sponsee that I can possibly be this day. I ask him to open my heart and my mind. I say all of the prayers that, you know, the big book has suggested, but not what I just said, that's what I do before I walk to the bathroom. Because between getting up and getting to the bathroom, baby, it's on. They're talking. They have opinions. They have agendas. And so that's what I do before I go anywhere, because if I don't get divorced from self-pity and all of those things, I can't possibly be married to David, and I can't possibly have a relationship with a higher power, because I've decided to have a relationship with a mind. And my mind has this way of creating a false reality that I buy right into. You know, I love magic. Anybody here like magic? I love magic. Magicians are so cool. Now, I know that magic's not real, but it looks real. And things that are perceived to be real are real in their effects. And if I believe it, it feels true. But here's the kicker. I'm the magician, and I'm the one watching. And I'm like, cool, how'd that happen? And I don't realize I'm making mischief behind my own back. Because how can you see yourself sometimes? Right? So I do that, and then I come back. And it says that I'm supposed to think about the 24 hours ahead. And when I'm working with somebody and we're just going to start, I'm like, okay, just get a piece of paper. Or don't. Use your fingers. You can count. I don't really care if you write it down or you don't write it down. But the point is, think about what today should have in it. Just take, a whole long time, like 30 seconds. Well, I'm going to come to the conference, and I kept coming back to, and then I'm going to sleep. This is literally where I kept coming up this morning. I'm going to go to the conference, and then I'm going to sleep. That was a long list, guys. It took me a whole long time to come up with that list. But that's actually not what I'm talking about, because it says we consider our plans for the day. So that was my plan. I'm going to go to the conference, and I'm going to sleep. That's my plan. Now I'm going to consider it. What does that mean? That means, God, what do you think about that plan? God has a way of stitching love into my plans. God has a way of making sure that I send a text to Danny, and, you know, whatever it is that comes into my mind says, and don't forget about this, and you could be doing that, and it always has something to do with you and not with me. How can I best serve thee? Thy will not mine be done. It makes me want to ask, God, show me how I can be helpful today to others. You know, who needs what? Let me be one of your blocks. Put me in the team. You know, like, here I am. And I think about things that I was not thinking about. And that's about that inspiration, that intuitive thought or decision. And it always has something to do with love. And it is, again, it's practical. It's simple. It's easy. And the question is, then later in the day, when the phone rings and I go, oh, can I remember that even if it is Anthony's name that's popping up, it's got nothing to do with Anthony. It's God calling. And I asked for the phone call. I ask every morning for those phone calls. Somebody said to me this morning, I know you're really busy. I know you really don't have time. And I'm like, I don't know that. God makes time. You know, that God does things that, oh, I get to do it. I'm moved to do that. Okay. So, you know, some of you have seen this, so don't shout out. You know, they talk about what's the shortest distance between two points? We're at MIT. Everybody at MIT knows the answer to this. What's the shortest distance between those two points? Straight line? That's the shortest distance between two lines. That's a tesseract. That's a wormhole. That's a miracle. My mind tells me that I know. But as soon as I think I know, I'm cut off from the knowledge that comes from God. And that's why I want to consider my plans, because my little plans and designs are just not big enough for God. That I don't know how much God has on offer, how much is on that table. That I can be sitting there wondering, why isn't there more for me? And, well, honey, it's because you left it there and you're not going to put it. Come. Sit down. Welcome. Like, that's the deal. This is what I'm trying to do upon awakening. This is where we're going. And all through the day, I'm going to be watching, how far have I come? I know I'm drifting. And that is not a self-abusive sort of thing. It is life. The current is out there and it drifts and the wind is blowing and it drifts. But you know what? When I do this, you know what I learn how to do? Put up a spinnaker sail. The wind can crash you to the shores or it can help you get to where you want even faster with more joy. It is my attitude that drives everything. That if I'm going to actually do this 12th step, then it has to be on a different basis. You know, Bill was going down to the Bowery in New York, and he's pulling out drunks, right? And he's telling them, God, I'll get you sober. Nobody got sober. We all know Lois was like, yeah, but Bill, you're sober. But the first time Bill went to somebody knowing that he was going to be lost on the rocks of alcoholism, when he went to save himself, to just follow the dictates of his higher power, to go talk to somebody and be uncomfortable and do those things, that's when the miracle happened. That's when the Tesseract happened. That's what it's about. That's why I have to put myself in a position to walk in grace. I cannot create grace. But the truth is, like, God is closer to me than the air that I'm breathing, but I'm not aware of it. I feel separate. When people say things like, God will never give you more than you can handle, you can probably guess what I'm going to say. Not my experience. My experience is that life, breathing for 24 hours is more than I can handle because I don't have the apparatus to extract enough oxygen out of the air. I always feel like I'm struggling. When I'm holding God's hand, there's nothing that can't be done. On my own, I am nothing. Lack of power is always my dilemma. The question is, in the morning, am I going to plug in? Because the lamp doesn't work no matter how many times I change the light bulb, steps 1 through 9. If I don't plug in and get higher powered, there's nothing to be had. I can't work. And then I drain. And if I'm trying to give you what I've got, we're all in trouble. Because I can't get you sober, I can't keep you sober, I can't get me sober, I can't keep me sober. But God can use me. I can be a channel if I let God. But when I think I know what my life has to look like, when I think I know that, you know, sometimes it is the stuff that I think is going wrong that turns into the greatest blessing. I didn't get where I needed to go. You know, I couldn't get into the conference a few weeks ago, whatever it is, you know, and my arrangements aren't staying put. Maybe I have to ask myself whether or not that's where I'm supposed to be, here, right here, right now. So when I start going into this, right, before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking. We want the saddle on the horse. I want God holding the reins, not me. Not me. I want my brain to be a tool, right? Especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with insurance. My brain is meant to be employed. It is not who I am. When before I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I would often think things like, I can't stand myself. There are two entities in that statement, I and myself. I can't stand myself. So who's the myself? I mean, the self, the ego. Who's the I? That's the spirit down inside of me objecting, right? Those things in 6 and 7, which we admit are objectionable. That's all we're talking about. That I want to, today, just for today, I want the spiritual woman to chair the meeting. I got sober down in Texas, and we have topic meetings, and if you get off topic, that chairperson, they will ring the bell, and you will be asked to gently come back to the topic, please, or you don't have to share. And I need to tell those stage characters. I was up last night texting with one of my sponsees because, you know, she had a stage character that would not shut up. And we were laughing about it. I was like, you know, yeah, tell her to sit down. And nobody wants what she has. Nobody wants what she has. But I have to learn that, you know, there really are these, I have to have some fun about it, right? that God's got a sense of humor and that we all have these struggles and we all have these stage characters, but there is something that I can do to help make sure that the spiritual woman is chairing the meeting. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance. After all, God gave us brains to use. And that's what I was saying. You know, I really am a smart woman, according to my GPA. And if you had tried to tell me, and some people did, that, you know, my problem was that I thought too much. And it wasn't that. Like, God gave me my brain. I am supposed to be who I am. The best I can offer you is who God made me. I don't need to go be somebody else. I don't need to pretend to not be a smart and capable person. And we all have different skills that we bring, and we need all of us. That's the incredible thing, is that, you know, we all bring different things to the table, and together we can build this incredible world. That I cannot do what you can do. The people that hear Anthony don't hear me the same way. That we are better together. And that I've always trying to be what I thought you wanted, instead of realizing that if you don't want what I have, that I'm talking to the wrong person. That there's somebody else. We search out another person who wants what we have with enthusiasm. That it's about the giving and not about the receiving. That my brain is, you know, it doesn't mean everybody has to like everything that my brain comes up with, including me. I don't have to listen to everything that comes out of my brain. That I can let that intuition lead me again. I can consider. The path of consideration is what I've been taught. That's about discernment. To talk to my spiritual team and let them help guide me. And sometimes we're still going to make mistakes. Sometimes we're still going to show up in Texas and your mother's going to call the police, no matter how many people you talk to. And, you know, it can still happen. But the reason the cops, I think, didn't give me a hard time is because they could see very clearly that I was there on one mission and one mission only, to try and be kind and loving to my mother. I had no agenda. That doesn't mean I always get it wrong, right or wrong. But if I go in thinking I know, it's very likely I'm gonna step on your toes. And when I get to, I don't know, I'm teachable. And that's what this whole consideration is about. What if I don't have all of the information? What if no matter how much I ask God for an open mind, I still don't get to see the truth? I can maybe see more truth, but I can't know what it's like to be you. But maybe you can help me to see it a little bit differently if I open my heart. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives. See, this is about my state of consciousness. Everything in my life, what do we recover from? A seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. It's my state of mind that keeps driving me back to drinking. I'm restless, I'm irritable, I'm discontented. And if I'm gonna stay sober and happy, because I can be in a state of physical sobriety, but that's where I am restless, irritable, and discontented. And the only kind of sobriety I have any interest in is happy, joyous, and free. That when I know that God, that's where God's trying to lead me, I can relax and take it easy. I can cease fighting anything and anyone, even alcohol. I don't have to get you sober. I don't have to get you on board. You don't have to like me. I don't need anything from you. I'm not trading with you anymore. If you don't like the love I have on offer, if you don't like my free services, that's okay with me. Because that's not how I get paid. I get paid by giving. I'm not going to be the one to break the circle today. My job is to love you, love you, love you, love you, love you. If you love me back, hey, that's bonus. But what I know is that that wellspring of love doesn't come from trading. And if it did, I'd sell myself short. The less I look for you to give to me, the more the blessings rain down on my head. That's spiritual math. That's spiritual math. You can't, it's multiplication. It's not simple addition. It's multiplication. In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Prayer We ask God for inspiration, intuitive thought, or decision. So we've already, now we're at the second prayer here, right? You know, the whole point is that I need to get okay with the not knowing. That can I be humble enough to realize, again, I don't know how to fix it. My ego always wants to be the answer girl because I want the illusion of control. I think, anybody like to worry? Worry, you know? I mean, my husband, this is his favorite pastime, I think, sometimes. You know, he's a worrier. And I tease him all the time because when we're worrying, what we're really doing is we feel like we did something. We haven't done jack. It's like a dog running on linoleum. It's going all real fast and going nowhere. Worry, 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 worry. Right? It doesn't help anything except it exhausts me and it gives me the idea that I have some kind of control where actually it's keeping me from letting God in. I'm not supposed to worry about what's out there. My job is to get invested right here. Present, awake, aware, here, now, see you, look into your eyes. That's what matters. And the truth is, I can't be all of the things I'd like to be. I can't do all of the things that I want to do. And I do let people down. And I wish that didn't happen. Except that all I can tell you is that I've got an open heart. I'll give you everything that I've got. And if you want to get mad at me, then that's your business. That's your inventory. But all I can tell you is that I'm going to love you. That God called me here to love you. I don't own you. They're not my sponsees. I need to tell them what to do and all that stuff. Like, my job is to love you. How can I help you on your journey? Where is it you want to go? Why is it I think I know where you should be when I don't know where I should be? I don't know what God wants from me, and I'm sitting here each and every day. God, show me, please. Just show me a little bit about where I should be going and give me the strength to go there, to have the courage to say, let's do it, right? To walk through the discomfort. God, we hate being uncomfortable, don't we? We hate being uncomfortable. Sobriety is really uncomfortable. Sobriety is super inconvenient. I want to go where it's comfortable for me. I just want to go to the meetings that fill me up. I want solution-based meetings. I'm not saying I don't agree with that. But man, if we all hide out in the solution-based meetings, who's dying in the ones that don't have it? Go to the meetings that fill you up, then go to the meetings that haven't heard it yet. Because that's what real purpose and direction is all about. You know, I have been so blessed to get in these really strange situations where I haven't had answers. When I moved to New York City, my sponsor at the time had, I think, 25 years of sobriety. And I get there, long distance, still really expensive. This is the mid-90s. And I leave her messages, and I never heard back from her. She never returned one phone call. Don't know. And she knew. The only two people I knew in New York City was my sister and my future brother-in-law ex-boyfriend. It was not a welcoming moment. And so I'm calling, I'm leaving her messages, and I've never, ever heard back from her. And I actually don't know what happened to her. But I am lost and alone in New York City, right? You know, and I'm going to AA meetings, and these are crazy AA meetings. I got to tell you, I'm like, I have never been in, and I'm not sure what I'm in. I'm not sure it's AA, though. I don't know what I'm looking at. But I move into this little 8.5 by 11 room. I lived in an SRO, and I lived there for, 4 years, 5 years almost. And I get out the meeting list book, and there's a meeting on my street that day I moved in. Now, again, I'm not good with numbers. So I walk down to the street, and I'm looking. It's my building. I walk back inside, and I ask the lady at the front desk. I'm like, is there an AA meeting here? She's like, yeah, it's down in the basement. So I go down to the basement, and the room is full of men that work in the meeting, in the building. And they all live in a sober house in Harlem. And I'm the one with the most sobriety in the room, and I'm the only one without a Y chromosome. And they don't know anything about the steps or the big book or anything else. And these are the guys that are cooking my food and washing the floors and cleaning the bathrooms and all that stuff. And I get to carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous to them. Because I don't have a man to turn them over to. But when anybody anywhere reaches out for help, I want the hand of AA always to be there. And it was there for me. And so I start working with these men. because that's where God called me. What am I supposed to do? Well, I'll just go find a women's meeting now. There are no women there, so I shouldn't be going there, right? How do I decide who gets this and who doesn't? It's not my job to get you well, but it is my job to make sure that this is here, to lay those spiritual tools out at your feet for inspection. And if you want to do this, come on, come along. It's easy to sponsor people who want to do this stuff. It's easy. And the real question is, see, this upon awakening is very much like sponsorship to me. It's, am I going to let God in? Just like my sponsors helped me to understand what God is. They showed me what God is, that verb part of God. Each day, my job, like you remember the old radios that you actually had to tune in to get the static to go away? Or better yet, the television, like you're even holding the rabbit ears up here, you know, on one foot to try to see the game better, you know? I got to tune in because I got static. It's so hard for me sometimes to hear God's voice because those stage characters are screaming in the background. You know that beam? Got to be on the beam. Everybody knows about the beam, right? Everybody know about the beam? Yep. How many of you, when you think about the beam, think about a gymnast? Only me. Yeah. Okay. I promise you, in the 1930s, Bill was not thinking about gymnasts. They didn't have television. He's probably never seen a balance beam. Think about that for a second. Then what the heck is it? It's a radio beam. It's a radio beam. I come from a long line of pilots. And they had these radio beams that they would shoot out into the world in World War I so that the planes, when they're lost in the fog, can find their way back. It's a homing beacon. It's a homing beacon. It's bringing you to safe harbor, and you don't fall off that beam. If you're not on it, you tune. You get the static out. You open your heart more. You let it draw you in. The spiritual life is not a theory, and it's not whips and chains. It's about letting those loving arms come around me. It's about insisting on the God of the big book. I had to find the God of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had to fire the old God, wrong God, wrong God, wrong God, wrong God. If it doesn't speak of love, it does not speak of God. Today, I am sure that God wants me happy, joyous, and free. It doesn't mean I'm always happy, joyous, and free, but that's where God's trying. If God's trying to drag me anywhere, that's where we're going. Am I going to let him? That's what the morning thing is all about. There's more love. There's more joy. There's more on the table. Am I going to try to wake up to that today? Am I going to try to open my heart? Am I going to let, you know, see, I think each of us are like a little prism. And when God's joy, God's love hits us, it breaks into a rainbow. It changes the way we see everything, and it delights other people when they see it, and it brings joy. You showed me how to have fun sober, and I didn't think that was possible. When I really think about, you know, how I start each day with this critical, critical mind. I judge everything, and I wonder why I always felt judged. And that's part of why I began to realize that if I didn't name those characters and see what was going on, that I would fall into that by default. Without my permission, I am living a life without my permission that does not bring joy, does not bring happiness, and the whole time I'm going, happy, joyous, and free. I have yet to meet an alcoholic walking into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous who wouldn't sign up for happy, joyous, and free. But we say it like it's a battle call, like it's my right to be happy, joyous, and free. Well, it is. But you see, I have this idea when it's a battle call that I am fighting the higher power to get to happy, joyous, and free. Instead, all I have to do is let the current take me. Every ocean, every river runs to the ocean. That's where we're going. everyone. I mean, the current is taking me where I'm supposed to go. I do not need to fight it. I grew up in the Gulf of Mexico next to one of the worst riptides in the world. And every little kid is taught what to do if you get caught in the riptide. You float. You do not try to swim to shore. You float. And that current, it'll take you a while, but then it'll let you go and you can get back to land safely. It's when I panic, it's when I think I need more power, more choice, more control, that everything begins to fall apart and I go under. And you know why it's so important that we have a bottom? Because if you are drowning and you are nowhere close to shore and you're nowhere close to somebody's hand and you're nowhere close to something to grab onto, your only hope is to get down to the bottom where you can plant your feet so you can propel yourself back up to the surface to get air. Because my bottom gives me the willingness to go to any lengths, not any lengths that I agree with. That as I go through the day, I get to look at the difference between the program and a rhesus program. Between any lengths and any lengths that I agree with. That's how I'm getting blown off course. When I start thinking that you should be whatever it is, or you shouldn't be whatever it is, or I should be whatever it is. Because the truth is, my life is great right here, right now, if I'm willing to let it be. That I don't need to have the things that we think about that are so important. That all of a sudden the importance of my life has shifted because I've been willing to look at the real value. It says, you know, we can't fool ourselves about values. That's what we're doing in that fourth step. Is it really money, property, prestige, health, you know, fame, whatever it is? Are those the things that matter to me? When I'm gone, are those things going to remain? I carry so many people in my heart. I have been blessed to walk with some of the most incredible spiritual people in my life, and they're all still here. And every single one of you, you may not know who Marianne is, but you know who Marianne is because if I touched you, she touched you. You may have never met Mark, but if you've met me and I've touched you, then you've met Mark. Or Clancy, or Cookie, or any of those other people, Scott, all of these people who have absolutely been willing to tell me, wake up. Don't miss your life. It's so easy to miss our lives. It's so easy to sit back and think it's supposed to come to me when I'm supposed to go to it. So when I think about this, right, the whole idea is I'm trying to be on the lookout for God, that the God of love is trying to break through. That's the whole thing. I'm a big believer in spiritual 2x4s. Spiritual 2x4s. I want pretty hearts raining down. You know, this is the way it's going to be. That's not my experience. I am definitely the girl who learns best by losing a few teeth and picking mortar out of my teeth. And you know, I'm so grateful today that nobody saved me from my brick walls. I'm so grateful that you gave me the space and the grace to fall down a lot. And as I've been raising my kids, right, I got to keep that in mind, that it's important to get to have mistakes, that it's important to be able to get it wrong and still be loved. And that's what you've given me in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've had people tell me I'm doing things they think are crazy. And you know what? It might be crazy for them. It might have even been crazy for me, but it didn't stop them from loving me. You don't have to do anything to make me love you. That my calling is to love you. That's what I think the big thing is in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's, you know, you can take Bill's inventory all you want. He had lots of it. But if I'm finally going to tell the truth, it's time for me to do both sides of the ledger. Because I only wanted to look at what people did wrong. And today I want to walk into this world watching for you doing it right. Catch you being good. Catch you being good. And that term was given to me when I was raising my kids. Catch them being good. See them. See them. Can I see you? And it's not lip service. And I can't do that unless I have that in my heart each morning, unless I really believe that the path that I'm trying to sail down is that path of love. This is where I'm going. This is where I have to know. I have to have that vision, that intent, that place out there where I believe in, so that I can come back, so that I can see when I've drifted. Because with, you know, that attitude of gratitude, love the idea of an attitude of gratitude. I don't have it. An attitude, we teach every newcomer to practice gratitude. Make gratitude lists. Make them. My first temporary sponsor, a starter sponsor, she said, you know, that I was supposed to make all these lists. And she said, and if you don't know what to be grateful for, start with your toes. There are people that don't have them. And I told you a story last night, which has kept that very much in the forefront of my mind. That you can't have an attitude of gratitude without being a practical program of grace, of gratitude, of being thankful, right? If you want to have a great day, notice what's right. When I have sponsees who are getting extremely erstwhile, when they're enjoying the pity parties, they get the gratitude assignment. 50 things before lunch and 50 things after. Why is that a big deal? More than 50 things happen to me before breakfast. That's the truth. Wake up, wake up. Look at how beautiful your life is. Look at the blessings raining down on my head. Why am I so focused on the things that aren't right? I didn't sleep well last night. Who cares? Who cares? You know, I started getting up really early in the morning because I had these sick kids. And I really needed, I began to realize that if I don't spend time with God, like really spend time with God, I turn into Attila the Bee. I do not like who I am. That if I'm willing to sit and tune in, then all of a sudden I can be the mother that they deserve to have, that I want them to have. Now, here's the reality of it, though. I've got he was so cute when he was little, you know, just about that age up there. And he'd wake up early. He's like me. He wakes up early. And he'd come downstairs, and I'd be sitting in my little chair, and he'd want to sit in my lap. And I'd be annoyed. And you see, I'm trying to meditate here. I'm trying to be spiritual, you know, and he wants to sit in my lap and love on me and hug on me. And I'm listening to that voice. Who the heck is that voice? And she needs to sit down and shut up. Because what better meditation is there than letting your little child hug on you and love on you and want to be with you? I never did that with my parents. I would never have dared do that with my parents. I wouldn't have thought they would have been there anyway if I'd asked. I learned early on not to ask for anything. The first time I remember going to my mother and telling her that Daddy was hitting me, and she looked at me and she said, and what'd you do to deserve it? That's the idea of God I had. And the idea of God that my kids have is, come sit in my lap. Tell me your problems. You can't sleep? Put your head on my shoulder. That's what Upon Awakening does for me. Upon awakening, I'm going to choose to have a different life today. Upon awakening, I'm going to choose love. Upon awakening, I'm going to choose. It's not my life, so you can't take from me. You can't waste my time. I can, but you can't. You can't. That's just God calling. You're just another opportunity for me to see God through that prism. See one more rainbow. See one more opportunity. You know how I said last night, you know, I know this is all about meditation. We usually conclude the period of meditation with a prayer. That we be shown all through the day what our next step is to be, that we be given whatever we need to take care of such problems. And so I said, like I said, I turned this into a prayer myself. I thank God for showing me all through this day what my next step is to be, for giving me whatever I need to take care of my problems. I thank God for freedom from self-will. And I ask for the strength to keep from making requests for myself only. And I have to be really clear on what this next part is, not to pray for my own selfish ends, because I thought that meant I didn't deserve anything. there can't be anything for me. But here's the thing I've learned since then, is that the more God gives me, the more I have to give to you. The more God gives me, the more I have to give to you. And my cup runs over, and so I can't even not give it to you. And I can ask. I just don't want to demand. The truth is, you know, I do hope that God can heal a lot of the stuff that's going on with my body. That'd be cool. But I quit waiting for that back in the 90s. And after my first back surgery, I got worse and not better. And I was on a cane, and I'd go down to the street, and I'd get it in a taxi, and I'd go to my home group. And it was in a church sanctuary, and I would lay on the back pew because it hurt so much to sit up or stand up or anything. And people were like, what are you doing? You should be home. You should be in bed. What are you doing? And I'm like, I can be here in pain or I can be there in pain. But I'll tell you, when I'm home in pain, that is a much worse sickness when this is the pain that you've got. And I'm laying on the back pew, and that changed my life. One of the greatest blessings I ever got. On weekends like this, I sit in the front row. Anybody who knows me knows that it's almost uncomfortable even on weekends like this, because I sit in the back. I sit in random places, because what I learned is that that's where the newcomers are. And here we are, we're running, and we got all this time, and I happen to know somebody up there who's just got a few months of sobriety, right? Why am I not back there? That's where I belong. I belong with the newcomers. I don't need to run in and save all the seats and make sure I got... The truth is, I don't hear well. I like sitting on the aisle so I can see people's lips. It helps, right? But so I used to want to sit up front because I don't hear well. But the truth is, I've heard the message. Have you? How about we reserve the first 10 rows for newcomers, huh? How about that? Am I saving those seats for the people who don't have the message yet? How about that? You see, whenever I let God have the opportunity to open my heart, it happens. I didn't know what was going to be going on. You know, it was embarrassing walking around on a cane. You know how they say AA is a crutch? It is. It is. Why do we fight them on that? It absolutely is. But I am a girl who at times could not walk at all without a crutch. And if you walk better with a crutch, please use it. And I'm not giving up my crutch of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, if on the other side of this, because it won't be much longer that I'll be walking, and that's okay with me. I don't need legs to be able to walk through my life. I don't need to not have pain to walk through my life. The truth is that the pain of my life has brought me closer to God. It's brought me closer to my sponsor. It's brought me closer to the work. It's brought me this willingness. And the truth is that I have so much physical discomfort that that's why I got my butt up and started looking for the pink clouds every day. Because I'm a wuss. I can't take the pain. You know, when I asked God all those years ago to heal my back, I thought he didn't at first. But sure he has. God's answered every prayer that's ever been important to me. When I asked God to save me from my father, I thought he didn't. But I'm still here. And it doesn't always look the way it is, but that inside of me that knows that there is something bigger, there is something better, that there is love, that calling inside of me, that's God. That's God. That the healing of my back is that I am no longer my body. That my body doesn't get to decide if I'm having a good day. My mind doesn't get to decide if I'm having a good day. My children don't have to be well to decide if I'm having a good day. You don't have to listen to me to decide if I'm having a good day. Whether or not anybody ever buys my work or any of that other stuff, none of that drives who I am. I'm one of God's kids, and God doesn't make junk. I believe that today, and you helped me to see that. You've helped me to believe that, and not because one day it just like whoop, came on. It was that line of the will. I've been given my willpower back. I got my sanity back behind that, and I'm setting the course each day. This is where we're going, and every time I drift off, I'm coming back. This is the order of the day. My job is to love you. My job is to give. My job is to love you enough that it melts the polar ice cap from around my heart. That's what happens when I consider the day. When I consider my plans for the day, I see how small they are. When I consider my plans for the day, I'm asking God to be the coach. I'm letting Him direct me. I'm letting Him send me. Where do you need me? Because it's not my life. I gave it to God. You know that third step prayer when it says, I offer myself to thee? You know, when we pass that seventh tradition in church, they call that an offering. I'm putting my whole self in that basket. It's not my life anymore. It's not my life. I gave it to God. The truth is, if I got what I deserved, I'd be in a hole in Texas. I should be dead. When I start hearing myself say things like, why me? Why not? I have everything I need to deal with whatever life throws at me. And not everybody has that. I was told this story long ago, and I guess I'm telling it now, that this guy got an opportunity to go talk to God, and he had a resentment, and he was mad about what life had given him, and he goes and he tells God, he's like, you know, this cross you gave me, it's too heavy, I can't do it. And God said, well, you know, here's the thing, that's what we call life. Everybody gets a cross, everybody gets stuff. But you see that door over there? That's the closet where we keep the crosses. So how about you go in there and you pick out any one you want? And the guy goes in, and it's a gnarly place. I mean, there are big, heavy iron crosses. There are ones with thorns and, you know, barbed wire and, you know, electric and, you know, just horrible, horrible things in there, right? And he finds this little silver cross with rounded edges that fits right in the palm of his hand. And he goes out and he says, okay, God, I'll take this one. And God says, but that's the one you have. Why is it, I think, that, you know, what you got would be easier for me when I don't actually know where you come from or what you've been through or who you are or what your challenges are? And, you know, the speakers this weekend, we've all told you a lot of the stuff from behind the curtain. And I told my kids when they were growing up that, you know, everybody's got problems. And my kids' problems were so obvious. They couldn't go to other people's houses. My daughter had to go to a private school because a public school was going to put her in isolation because that's the only way they knew how to keep her safe. Because no, they didn't understand allergies, except nut allergies back in those days, right? And they didn't know how to make her safe. And so Darlie would come to me sometimes and she'd say, you know, well, but Mama, what's her problem? Because she learned everybody's got problems. We just don't always know what they are. If I knew your whole story, I would probably be able to have compassion and love. I'd let you go ahead if I knew that you were trying to take your child to the hospital because they're having trouble breathing. I remember being the parent and in the, you know, Darlie's in the back seat and she's having trouble breathing and I'm there, you know, so she's completely dehydrated, she's almost limp and I'm terrified and I'm driving very aggressively and rudely. And I'm thinking there going, I hope I can remember what it feels like to be the person everybody thinks is an asshole. Can I try to walk a mile in your moccasins? Isn't that what it's about? Consider my plans for the day. Consider that I have only one tiny little piece of information upon which I'm trying to make decisions about who you are and what you should do and everything else and how arrogant of me. Can I consider the fact that there really is a whole point? I've never met anybody who shows up at a business meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous who's trying to kill AA. We all think we're doing what's best. And I think AA is stronger than a few drunks who don't, you know, agree with me. I'm glad they're willing to speak up. I'm glad I've learned to speak up. I'm glad I've learned that I'm better when I listen. I'm glad I've learned that just for today, I can encourage you to open your heart and to fully participate, even when I don't agree. I hope you plan to have a beautiful day. I suggest you don't make other plans.